And how Moses had been called by God to be used kind of in delivering his people from bondage. And then how Moses, you know, with the burning bush, you know, questioning God, saying, who am I? Feeling kind of weak, feeling full of fear, but eventually saying yes to God in faith. And really kind of inviting God to show him who he is, who he was. Starting really this journey for Moses in a relationship with God that amazingly eventually kind of gets described later in the book of Exodus in chapter 33, verse 11, by saying that actually the Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. So Moses, this journey that he was on, saying yes to God, God showing him who he was, who he is. This week, we're going to continue the Exodus story by actually looking at what happens as Pharaoh, someone who thinks he is strong, someone who thinks he is actually full of power, someone who he strikes fear in others. He says no to God. He has no desire to know him. And instead, Pharaoh continues the ruthless oppression of God's chosen people. And so last week we ended by saying that even though sometimes, you know, we just as Moses kind of feel weak, say, who am I? That it's all about God and what God can do, what God will do, what he says he will do. All about what God can do. And so this week we are going to see what God can do. And it's amazing. But I'm going to tell you right now that actually this sermon is not going to be like a real like feel good sermon. It's not going to be one that's going to get all like kind of tied up nice and neat at the end with, you know, an inspiring, you know, positive, you know, point of personal application with something that, you know, I'm going to kind of challenge you to go and do this week in applying what we've learned about this morning. That's not really what this is going to be about, per se. It's actually going to leave us feeling a little bit uncomfortable, I think. It'll leave us with questions. And actually, to be faithful to the Old Testament, that's just what happens in the Old Testament sometimes. That's the way it is. But what I hope is that it will leave us in awe, really, just in awe of who God is. So we're going to look at the plagues this morning, the plagues that God brought upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. We're actually just going to look at 9 out of 10 of the plagues. We're going to look at the first 9, and we're not even going to really look at them in much of any detail, but we're going to kind of see them as the backdrop to grasp the point of this part of the story and really to be faithful to the narrative that's being told here in this part of Exodus. But before we consider the plagues which take place in chapter 7 through 11, we really need to go back briefly to chapters 4, 5, and 6 to set the stage. And so here's what it says in chapter 4, verse 21. And the Lord said to Moses, "When you go back to Egypt, see that you do before Pharaoh all the miracles that I have put in your power. But I will harden his heart, so that he will not let the people go." So we're starting with a pretty uncomfortable little piece here, and we're going to actually come back to it at the end. So we're not going to unpack it here. But the matter of the hardening of Pharaoh's heart remains a classic example of the puzzle of God's relationship with human beings. And there's actually a great book. It's kind of more of an academic book, I guess, but written by one of my seminary professors, Dr. Gary Schnicker. He talks about this a good bit. And he's just a brilliant dude. And the book is called The Torah Story. Kind of the subtitle is It's an Apprenticeship on the Pentateuch, which is the first 5 books of the Bible. And it really is that. It's an apprenticeship. It's not, you know, just a commentary. It really unpacks things and makes connections. And it really has shaped a lot of my kind of understanding and perspective on the Pentateuch, on this part of the Old Testament. And so this is one of those puzzling things, right? And so that same professor, I remember one day in class saying to us that if God had made everything black and white, and if God had given us clear answers to everything in the Bible, then we wouldn't have anything to talk about, right? I mean, that's true. Like, we wouldn't really have much to talk about if it was all just plainly laid out there, black and white. Everything was easily answered. There was no mystery. There was no kind of, none of these kind of puzzling situations. We wouldn't really have a whole lot to talk about. It'd kind of be done. So that is something that, especially in this particular part of the story, that will definitely come into play and shape it. So that's chapter 4, kind of setting the stage for part of this kind of uncomfortable scenario. Chapter 5, verses 1 and 2 say this: afterward, Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." But Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and moreover, I will not let Israel go." So in contrast to Moses, who said, "Who am I, God, that you like would use me? I'm nothing. Like, I can't do this. Who am I?" Pharaoh, in his pride and seeming power, says, "Who is the Lord? I don't know him. I don't care to know him." Moses says yes to God. Pharaoh says no to God, and Pharaoh hardens his heart even more. Pharaoh is a hard-hearted man, a hard-hearted and ruthless ruler. And so who is the Lord? Pharaoh asked. Pharaoh is about to find out who the Lord is. In chapter 6, verse 1, it's not up here, but very, very quickly says, "But the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh." And then we jump into the beginning of chapter 7, and it says this: "But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my hosts, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring out the people of Israel from among them. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord." And so we jump into the plagues now. And the plague narrative, it's both kind of an integral part of the Exodus story and one of the most difficult parts of the story to understand. So why plagues? Well, some scholars believe, and at least it's kind of generally understood, that these plagues are directed against Egyptian gods. And it even says that later in the book. It says that, you know, God is so far above the Egyptian gods and all of that. So generally speaking, that's kind of understood. In general, God was demonstrating his supremacy in defying and defeating the Egyptian gods. Some people, and maybe you've heard this, some scholars actually go kind of so far as to lay out the comparison and kind of the one-to-one match between the plague and the Egyptian god that plague was directed against. And so whether we can actually go that far is not kind of a slam dunk, but generally speaking, we can say that it was definitely God demonstrating his supremacy over the Egyptian gods. According to most rabbinic sources, the primary goal of the plagues is really the demonstration of God's unparalleled power. The demonstration of God's unparalleled power. As we read in chapter 7, God's purpose in the plagues was that Pharaoh and the Egyptians and the Israelites and Moses and all of us, really, that we would know, that Pharaoh and the Egyptians would know that Yahweh is God. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. Another purpose of the plagues is that God wanted to demonstrate his uniqueness. He wanted to demonstrate his uniqueness. So his unparalleled power, that they would know that he is Lord and that he would demonstrate his uniqueness, that they would know that there is none like him. So how does this play out? Well, we see, first of all, as Aaron and Moses go to Pharaoh to kind of start going at him with saying, let my people go and all of that, that there's kind of like a warm-up, like a pre-plague sign, kind of like a warm-up to the plagues. Because Pharaoh, you know, saying, who is the Lord? He wanted proof. He wanted some kind of proof. So God says, all right, when Pharaoh asks you to prove yourselves, this is what I want you to do. Aaron, I want you to throw your staff down on the ground, and it's going to turn into a serpent. So that's what Aaron did. But Pharaoh said, okay, that's cool. And then he called his own magicians in, and they did the same thing. They threw their staffs down, and they became serpents. So, you know, no big deal, except the, you know, God did kind of give a nice touch in that Aaron's staff swallowed up the other ones. So that was a nice touch. But Pharaoh's like, nah, I'm not gonna let you guys go. So, okay, here we go. Plague number one. Water turned to blood. All the water. The Nile, the canals, the pools, the cisterns, all the water turns into blood. Fish die. It stank. It was awful. They couldn't drink the water. And so in chapter 7, verse 17, it says, thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. He's just going to keep kind of repeating this. They're going to know that I'm the Lord. And so the water was turned into blood. But just like the staff kind of warm-up thing with the serpents, Pharaoh said, all right, magicians, like, show us what you got. The magicians did the same thing. They actually turned water into blood too. Very interesting to think about the power that exists outside of God, in the secret, the dark spiritual world, the power that exists there. They did the same thing. So Pharaoh again, not gonna let you go. All right, plague two, frogs. Like literally everywhere, frogs jumping up their tunics, frogs on top of their. It doesn't say that, but it does say frogs in their beds, frogs in their ovens, just frogs everywhere. Frogs coming out of the Nile, frogs coming out of the pools and the canals, just frogs everywhere. All right, magicians, what you got? They did the same thing. In chapter 8, verse 7, the magicians did the same thing. They were able to bring frogs out. So here, Pharaoh actually pleads. This is really gross. Frogs everywhere. So Pharaoh actually pleads with Moses, can you take the frogs away? Please. So Moses says, okay, let me check with God on that and see if he'd be willing to kind of take the frogs away. And God says, okay. And why does God say, okay, I'll take the frogs away? Chapter 8, verse 10. You guys can probably guess what the answer to these questions are going to be now, right? So that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God, right? So the first couple of ones, that they shall know that I am the Lord. This one, so that they will know that there is no one like the Lord our God. So this is demonstrating his uniqueness. Listen, there is no one like me. I will relent with the frogs. I will take the frogs away. But still, Pharaoh still had a hard heart. And if you know the story, then you know that. All right, plague three. Gnats. We're going to spend a few minutes on this one because actually this is like a turning point in the story. So Exodus chapter 8, 16 to 19. Then the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth so that it may become gnats in all the land of Egypt. And they did so. Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff, struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast, gnats everywhere. All the dust of the earth became gnats in all the land of Egypt. all the dust in all the land of Egypt. Now, here's the difference. The magicians tried by their secret arts to produce gnats, but they could not. So there were gnats on man and beast. Then the magicians said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart was still hardened. He would not listen to them as the Lord had said. The Lord had predicted that this would happen. This is a turning point. Why? Because Pharaoh's magicians had succeeded in replicating the first two plagues and even the warm-up, right? The blood and the frogs, they had succeeded in replicating those two plagues. But on this one, they stumble in their attempts to produce gnats. And several commentators explain this failure by noting the use of the word to bring out or to become in the description of the plague of gnats. Producing the plagues of blood and frogs requires only the transformation of an existing substance. God, through Moses and Aaron, kind of changes the water to blood, and then in the frog plague, draws out, and I had never thought of this before, draws out what presumably could be pre-existing frogs. Right? I mean, there's frogs in the Nile and in whatever canals, pools, different things, right? There's frogs. So presumably, they could just be kind of drawing out pre-existing frogs out of the water. The contrast in this plague is that God creates gnats. God creates gnats. Only the creator of the universe, according to the rabbis, can create something new. God creates the gnats. Only the creator of the universe can create something new. These unreplicable plagues persuade Pharaoh and his people of God's power. And also, it builds faith in God among the people of Israel. This is a turning point. Even the magicians recognize it. This is the finger of God, they say to Pharaoh. But still, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He says, no, I'm not going to let you go. All right. Plague four, flies. Flies are nasty. Flies everywhere. 8:22 says, again, why? That you may know that I am the Lord. Interestingly, in this one, there's also something we're not going to get into much, but this is also when God starts to make a distinction between the Egyptian people and the people of Israel regarding the plagues and who they impact. And so this plague of flies impacts only the Egyptian people, not the people of Israel. Pharaoh, still hard-hearted. Nope, not going to let you go. All right, plague five. All the Egyptian livestock die. All of them. All the livestock. But not the Israelite livestock. Again, there's that distinction. Did Pharaoh let them go then after plague five? No. Plague six, boils on man and beast. Everybody had boils. If you've ever had boils, they are not fun. They hurt. Boils on man and beast. And listen, after the gnat thing, the magicians are kind of out of the picture. And it even specifically mentions the magicians in plague six. And it says the magicians couldn't even stand before Moses now because of the boils. The magicians, like they're out of the picture. They can't even be there. They can't even be in Moses' presence because of this plague. Boils, plague six. Pharaoh, hard-hearted, nope. Plague seven, hail. Chapter 9, verses 14 to 16. This time I will send, God saying, this time I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people, so that what? So that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. For by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. But for this purpose I have raised you up, to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. There is none like me in all the earth. And God says, for this purpose I have raised you up, to show you my power. And so what we recognize here, again, makes us a little bit uncomfortable, because Yahweh, God, was not merely trying to deliver his people from bondage. That isn't all that's going on here. That isn't the point, really. He's not just delivering his people. He says he could have done that like that. He could have done that with a single act of wrath. He could have wiped out the Egyptians. He wanted to publicly display his unparalleled power and his uniqueness. That makes me a little uncomfortable. That's what he does. He wanted to publicly display his unparalleled power and uniqueness. But it doesn't deter Pharaoh, again, hard-hearted as he is. So we have plague number 8, which is locusts everywhere. And so the hail really did a lot of damage to all, you know, trees, any livestock that was left out there, all their vegetation, all of that, right? The locusts then come along and they take care of everything that the hail didn't. And so they chew up all the other stuff, the plants and everything, and they swarm everywhere. What the hail didn't destroy, the locusts did. And plague 9 is darkness. We're not even going to get into that one. But here's what it says in chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine among them, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your grandson how I have dealt harshly with the Egyptians and what signs I have done among them." Why? That you may know that I am the Lord. That you may know that I am the Lord, over and over and over again. This is the point. This is the purpose. And so we're back to this idea of what we started with God saying he was going to harden the heart of Pharaoh, right? And so multiple times, so we got to also recognize that multiple times Pharaoh is hardening his own heart. He's already a very hard-hearted, ruthless ruler. So it says multiple times that he hardened his heart, that his heart was hard. But it also multiple times, not just in passing, not just something that we can kind of brush aside or anything like that. It says multiple times very clearly that the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. Even in chapter 11, verse 10, it kind of closing out these first 9 plagues, it says Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land. So here's what we have. Pharaoh and God are each responsible for the stubbornness of Pharaoh. Again, Pharaoh was certainly already hard-hearted. But what we can't ignore is that the fact that God was explicit that he was planning to harden Pharaoh's heart also. Why? Because he wanted to perform all of his acts of judgment against the Egyptians. He wanted to do all of these great acts of judgments. And so in order to do that, God hardened the heart of Pharaoh so that all of these great acts of judgments could be done, so that they would know that he is the Lord, so that they would know that there is none like him. This is a sovereign display of God's power that we can't brush aside, we can't soften it, we can't explain it away. And so even this book from my seminary professor, he says, whether or not readers understand why or how, they can read for themselves that judging Pharaoh as he did was God's prerogative. It was God's prerogative to judge Pharaoh the way that he did. And even this book, the last three words that it says in this section, he says, it's God's prerogative. Why? He is God. He is God. That's what I want us to grasp this morning. Sometimes we just need to sit with something like this that maybe is a little bit uncomfortable for us, maybe leaves us with more questions than answers, isn't kind of tied up nicely and neatly in the end. He is God. You shall know that I am the Lord, he says. You shall know that there is none like me. You shall know. And so that's where we're going to leave it today. That's where we're going to leave it. Now, what's nice is that I know what's coming next week. And you will too. You got to come back next week, though. Pastor Steve will talk about the Passover and the 10th plague, which is kind of the ultimate judgment. And he'll talk about how that foreshadows ultimate redemption as well. Because beyond being a punishment to the Egyptians, the plague really are a step in the process of redeeming the world. But you have to come back next week to hear that part. Today, this morning, I want us to sit with this. To sit with this. Can we do that? Can we close our eyes? Can we sit with this for a moment? Can we recognize together who God is? Can we recognize that he is the Lord? He wants us to know that. He wanted Pharaoh, the Egyptians, Moses, the people of Israel to know that he is the Lord. He is unparalleled in power. He is unique. There is none like him. There is none like our God. You shall know that I am the Lord, he says. You shall know. Let's sit with that in silence for just a moment before we sing together. But this is the God that we serve. This is the God that we follow. He's amazing. He is Lord. There is none like him. Let us sit with that for a moment and reflect.